Hey there, it's your happy Asian woman host, Alice Chen. Do you know any teens who are feeling overwhelmed with the college admissions process? If so, send them my way. I run Bright Story Admission Consulting, a boutique company that focuses on college application essays. A little about me. I'm a Stanford grad, a professional journalist, and I also coach other essay coaches. I love teaching people how to write, and I'm so thrilled when my students get into schools that they love, like Stanford, MIT, and the UCs. Learn more about my company at brightstory.info. Welcome to Happy Asian Woman, a show to help Asian American women find more joy in love, work, and life. I'm your host, Alice Chen, a professional journalist and entrepreneur. I've also been married for almost 15 years, and I'm the mother of two young girls. If you want to build more community, come join our supportive Facebook group. The link's on my website, www.happyasianwoman.com. Thanks for joining us. If you missed part one, be sure to listen in when we talked about how to unearth and value your sexuality, sex myths, and how to love yourself. Let's check out part two.
So you also talk about like attraction, presentation, and flirting. And tell me more, like what are some of your top tips or exercises for that type of thing?
Yeah, well, I know it's cliche, but the top tip really is just be yourself. You don't want to present a different you because then you might attract someone who doesn't fit well with the real you. And that's just exhausting and a waste of your time and energy. Yeah. As well. But I do encourage people, like a slight twist on that is just to be the highest version of yourself, be the ideal you. Mm-hmm. Just figure out who that is, what she's like, he or she's like, what they think about, how they, what thoughts they have, how they act, how they show up, how they go about life. Mm-hmm. And then the more detailed that you can be, I think the more that we can embody that person. Mm-hmm. So I think that definitely makes you 10 times more attractive. It improves your confidence because I really think it's about that. And like, if you are fully comfortable in your sensuality, then you embrace play. You realize that life's meant to be fun. We're not meant to just suffer or just study or work. Right. It's great to achieve. I love that about our culture, but then not to forget all the other parts that make life balanced and rich and just so special.
Yeah.
So I think once people embrace that, then they find that, wow, I have so many connections, so many new opportunities open up, or different sort of people are attracted to me. Mm-hmm. And that's really exciting. Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting. Kind of digest that one about being your highest self. And now I am thinking, well, I've been married for 15 years now.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. My anniversary is right around now. So I'm like thinking, I feel like in marriage, especially with young kids, it's so easy to be in like the ratty clothes and the pajamas and the messy hair and the messy house. And it's hard to get that energy up and to be like I was when I was young and single and slept and had little responsibility and you know, did my nails or wore makeup or whatever. I mean, what sort of advice would you have for someone in my situation? Not, you know, listeners who may have children or who have been married for a while. How do you keep the attraction and that whole thing alive for us?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's just, first off, hats off to all of you who are juggling so much. I really think it really does take a village to raise a child. Like two people is not enough. I really think to maintain your connection, I think date nights really are important. Yeah. Having that time to reconnect with your partner and remembering why you fell in love and why you chose to be together. So finding some kind of care for the kids or asking for some help or trading off with another couple. Yeah. If you can afford to hire help, I think that just allows you to get some time back for yourself. Yeah. And to not feel guilty about it. I feel like that's a big thing about Asian culture. Just we're so sensitive and attuned to the needs of other people, mm-hmm. and that it's noble to sacrifice ourselves all the time. Mm-hmm. But when we do that, we really burn ourselves out. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can do so much more and have so much more to give others if we maintain our own health and our sanity, mm-hmm. and fill our own cup first.
Yeah.
It's not selfish or self-indulgent. And I feel like that's a really tough thought to change, but it's definitely possible.
Yeah.
I think people need to experience that first. Like, oh, I have so much more energy now to give to my loved ones. This is okay. It's okay to put on my own oxygen mask first, right? As they say on the planes, and then you can help others.
Yeah, that's so important. And it's so helpful, I feel like, to hear it from a doctor. You know, I actually remember when I first had my first child, I think at her 2-month visit, she was like not gaining weight, and she had colic, and we had so much trouble with her, and I wasn't sleeping well. And I think that her pediatrician did tell me that I had to take care of myself first. I think she could just see it in my demeanor, like how tired and unhappy I was.
Yes. So
thank you for spreading that news. I think it's one thing to read it like in a women's magazine or whatever, but to hear it from like a medical authority, to have that permission. We Asians like authority, I guess.
I guess. Or degree.
Yeah, so true. So we touched on this a little bit, but how and what do you teach about sensuality, and how do you develop it? Did you have any other tips? I find it interesting that you said it was like all your senses. Like for me, when I think of a sensual person, it's like someone who's aware of their sexual attractiveness, and they kind of like use it, they flaunt it, they're so confident. I mean, how do you define it? And I feel like I don't do that. So I'm just curious. Not me, but well, for people true. I know, you know.
I really feel that we are all attractive in our own ways. We may not feel like we're that typical, really, I don't know, sexy person, but other people will find us cute or endearing or with our quirk. So as long as we're just being us, I think everyone is attractive in their own way. Mm-hmm. So it's just really about being really comfortable with you and knowing yourself well. And right, as I mentioned, engaging all your senses, just practicing that mindfulness and enjoying everything, because people are definitely drawn to people who enjoy life, mm-hmm. people who have just this energy about them. Mm-hmm. People can feel it. They can sense it from you. So I'm sure that other people who know you, Alice, will just say, oh yeah, Alice is awesome. And so I think that to some people, they'll just think of you as that super sensual, sexy woman, and you don't even know it.
Oh my gosh. I highly doubt that, but maybe back in my single days, I feel like this whole motherhood thing has put this all on the back burner. And also with Asian culture, I felt like it was never like a very valuable. I mean, I guess I didn't see it modeled. And even now when I see the older generation, it's so practical. And mm-hmm. I feel like as a culture where, correct me if I'm wrong, at least maybe the culture I grew up in and observe, it seems like that's not like super valued and embraced.
I would agree with that. That's
like sexy. Let's not call it even sensuality, like living your sensual, vibrant, like senses-based life, but being sexy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, what do you think people want women to be like? Not be sexy, but just be, as you said, practical and beautiful or poised or graceful?
Probably those type of things, like classy, mm-hmm. elegant, cultured, well-educated, mm-hmm. intelligent, high earning potential, perfect in like the, you know, Grace Kelly, Audrey Hepburn, like that type, and not the very mm-hmm. like showing your boobs and mm-hmm. butts and belly buttons and that kind of thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm just thinking of a very specific sector of Asian America or Asian. I know there are actually lots of very sensual Asian women. or sexy. But mm-hmm. I wonder if it's just something that like being married with kids or that's like taking that off my radar screen probably. But yeah.
No, but what I would say to that is, why do you feel like you have to be that way? The typical sexy model. Like, why is that what you aspire to be?
I guess because that's what, maybe I have a certain image of what sexy and sensual is, but what I'm hearing from you is that it's being who you are, comfortable in your own skin, confident in knowing who you are.
Yes.
And your needs, your wants, and basically attracting people through your natural exuberance.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, I don't think there's only one way to be sexy. Definitely.
That's very true. We'll have to get some guys on too.
Yes.
Have you? Is this what guys think too?
Oh, I see. Yeah, I don't think, I'm not sure. We'll have to ask the guys. Yeah. I feel like everyone has different tastes. Some of them like the ones who are, right, as you mentioned, graceful and elegant.
Yeah.
And just have that air. Because they have that confidence in themselves too. And that's really attractive.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm thinking too, is probably different types of sexiness attract different types of men. So yes. What are your top tips for enjoying and getting good at sex?
Ooh, good question. Top tips. Well, oh yes. My top tip is removing that performance from it, because it's not a performance, and it's not something that has to go a certain way either.
Yeah.
So many people are focused on that big O, the orgasm, right? And if it doesn't happen, they feel like they failed or their partner failed, and it's just this whole terrible thing. It's no, it's really the journey. It's an entire buildup, and it's about whatever you make it about. If it is about love and intimacy and connection for you, just enjoy that. Don't put pressure for a certain outcome, and then it will just be so much more enjoyable. And then it's hard, but really try to not think about the other things too. Oh, I want everyone to read this article about why having sex every day is 10 reasons that it's great for your health. I mean, it relieves stress. It's keeps you healthy. It's a form of exercise. It helps with the bonding. There are just so many great benefits to it. Just to have that sort of mindset about it. Oh, sorry, got off topic, but like that's just having that positive attitude about it, I think really helps. And to not feel like you have to perform and just to not have those expectations. And I think, oh, another myth, I guess, where people don't seem to know that there's such a difference between how long it takes a woman to go through the arousal stage and reach orgasm as opposed to a man. Like a man can in a few minutes, and then a woman on average takes 20 minutes. So that's why foreplay is important. And just not having those kind of expectations. And I think just communicating with your partner, and then being open-minded, because everyone has different preferences, different kinks and fetishes, different things that they find sexy or things that they want to try. And so to just be there, be willing to meet your partner and at least talk about it, have a conversation about it. But then also to know that because you agreed to something doesn't mean that you have to go through with it. It's your right to change your mind at any point, to stop, try something different. I think many people just feel like, oh, I've agreed to it, now I have to see it through. And that does cause damage. That's how rape happens. That's how sexual assault, and that really damages people with these invisible scars and sometimes physical scars for decades or the rest of their lives. So I'm really passionate about that, and just helping people avoid those situations. Like, both men and women have experienced rape, just like not going along with something unless they're like right there, super enthusiastic about it. There's a difference between just saying, oh, like this is okay, this is tolerable, versus I'm really into this. And just having that constant and frequent, consistent communication.
You mean during sex? So knowing at any point, if one person doesn't want to do it, the other person should stop.
Right. Right. Or if it becomes too awkward to talk about in the moment, you can just have some kind of safe word or some kind of gesture or action, then you can talk about it later as well, or ideally before. Every couple approaches it differently.
Yeah, that's such a great tip. I mean, I've been reading some stories about rape recently, and it's been so disturbing. Like, you know, at Stanford, someone was raped by their professor. I know people who were raped by their bosses.
Yeah, it's awful.
And I'm a mother of two girls, and that's like my big fear, you know? And so this is a minor tangent, but how you previously also talked about, like, so bad things don't happen. People need more information. What tips do you have? I don't know what you know about rape statistically, who's doing it, how the situations happen and things like that. But what are some of your top tips?
Yeah, definitely. I'm really passionate about that area. I know the statistic is one in six women will be raped in her lifetime. And that is appalling. That's so horrible. I just no words for that.
Okay, go on. It's horrible. Yeah. It's like a national epidemic, you know?
It is.
Like, if this type of thing were happening to men or something, you know, like it would be treated differently. Okay, go on.
Right, right. And then some men do. I don't know that statistic. I think some, maybe 10% of men, but I'll have to double check on that.
Wow.
Yeah, it's terrible. I think there's a lot of victim blaming as well. So it's probably even higher. Just some people are afraid to come forward because of the shame, and because they feel like, well, I won't be believed anyway, or it might make things worse or make them less safe. So for rape prevention, I really think it's a joint effort. It's not about just educating the victims on how to protect themselves, because there's so many things already that women do, like we don't walk alone too late at night, or things we have to be vigilant about. Some people even carry pepper spray, but that's just an extreme. I wish we could live in a world that is safer than that we won't have to do that. So I do think a lot of education lies with the people who could be rapists or the perpetrators or the abusers as well. Just educating them about equity and about everyone deserves to be respected. I feel like a lot of media objectifies women, and it's terrible. I have mixed feelings. Like, I know that in certain situations or that sex sells, but it's just, I think just educating people from a young age, because I remember my sex ed, they split us up. They told the girls and the boys different things. But I feel like how great it would have been had we been able to come together and talk about, and I think that there's so much that we can do just to cultivate that respect for the other sex and a better understanding. And I think also calling it out, I really feel like it's everyone's responsibility. If someone is making an offhand comment that's disrespectful or to someone, saying like, oh yeah, she was, I don't know, or cat calls or things like that, it feel that we should speak up. If we're not, we're either, right, it's like not enough to be not racist. We have to be anti-racist. I feel like it's not enough to just be not sexist, or you have to be anti-sexist, anti-rape. Right. So it's really complicated. I really just wish that it was something that was talked about more often, just in school, even from a young age, from elementary school.
Do you know what circumstances? Is it mostly date rape, or like what?
So most of the time it's not by a stranger. It's by someone that the woman knows, or that the victim knows. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it is hard, because a lot of times substances are involved, such as alcohol. And then people just say, oh, the lines were blurred, or things were unclear, or there was consent before, but then it was taken away. I think that telling people about consent, how it is ongoing and it can be reversed at any time is important. And then not pushing it, because a lot of times people are thinking about their own pleasure and they're not as in tune or putting their partner first. So just changing that culture. I think it just will take time. And it will take a lot of talking about it, activism, speaking out about it.
I know. I hope it gets better with every generation. I have no idea what historically it's been like, but like, I look at my daughter's peers And they're so mm-hmm. cute. They're adorable right now. And I'm like, could these boys grow up to be, you know, like, it's
yeah.
horrifying how like these innocent little boys on the playground. And then mm-hmm. you read about Brock Turner at Stanford.
Oh my God. Right. Oh
my gosh. He's like a pro swimmer or whatever. And then he thinks he can do this. And then he's protected. It's just, I don't know how that happens.
Right. And he wasn't found guilty. Yeah. It was just like, yeah. what?
So. Yeah. It's a cultural thing. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. But as a mom, I'm like, I want answers now for my own daughters.
That's right. That's right.
We'll have to talk about that. Great. Well, how can people yeah. get in touch, follow your work, take your course, that type of thing?
Yeah, people can find me on Instagram or Facebook. Those are my two main platforms. Oh, my website. I run a WordPress. It started as a blog or travel blog, and then I started adding my artwork to it. And now it's just become this huge thing. So I'm at drtooney.com. And my name is Dr. Tooney because I'm a cartoonist. So it's drtooni.com. Okay. They can find me there. They can send me messages. That way they can even schedule a call with me too, to just ask questions or if they have any collaboration ideas. Yeah. I'm always down to draw an idea out, especially if it's for a mission that I care about, like women's mm-hmm. equality, women's health, yeah. mental health, or Asian culture too. Like, oh, I guess I should mention one thing that I enjoyed was illustrating the five Asian love languages, just coming up with like a satire on the traditional five love languages. Mm. So that's one of the fun projects that I didn't even know would come up, but it just came up when talking with another entrepreneur. And then I was like, yeah, I'm going to roll with this. So I just love that. Because I really believe that some things are outdated, that they hold us back, and that I think that everything is worth challenging, or at least thinking about, does this apply to me? Is this authentic for me? Mm-hmm. And to not feel guilty or shameful about liking what you like or disliking what mm-hmm. you don't. Just be the most fully expressed version of you, the most authentic version. And a lot of it, it comes just from learning to love ourselves mm-hmm. and trusting ourselves and our gut and being more connected with ourselves. Mm-hmm. So that drives everything that I do. All my missions are that have that common thread.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fascinating. Thank you so much for your time. And I look forward to following more of your work.
Thank you so much, Alice. Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it with a few friends. I have a dream to build up a strong community of Asian women, and I think the best way to do that is through word of mouth. Also, if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, that would be awesome. Finally, come join our community on Facebook, where we discuss these episodes and how to incorporate happiness into our everyday lives. Thanks, and have a great week.